Everybody, welcome back here. Another episode of In the Zone. This is episode 199. I'm Giancarlo Lino, joined as always by Chris Martelli. And it's a big week, big weekend. And we're going to start this off by talking about the World Cup, which begins tomorrow. It's going to run for the remainder of the month, going into December with the final and the round of 16, the semis and all that good stuff. But this is always a fun time to look at before the tournament because everybody's expectations on one team are that they're just going to go in and dominate. And if we've seen at other tournaments, sometimes that's not the case. They end up going out a little too early. So, Chris, we'll start off with just this Canada group here because they got it in tough. They got Croatia, Belgium, the two Euro giants there, and they got Morocco. As a Canadian, are you feeling confident in this, or do you think this is going to be a bad World Cup for them?
I think the key word is optimistic. I'm optimistic with this team. I mean, the fact that they're the fourth highest odds, I think, is incorrect. I think we are a team that's up and coming. It's just been a great story. The narrative, I think, bolsters a lot of the results. And, you know, we saw a couple years ago, not a couple, maybe now like 10 with Ghana all those years ago, they had a little narrative going. And they went to the round of 16 and they almost went to the semifinals. So I think Canada's in a similar spot. I mean, Croatia, obviously, I'm not going to disrespect them. You know, they went to the World Cup final. But this is an older team now. I think Canada's pace can really push them to maybe beat a Croatia team. I'm not going to say they're going to beat Belgium, but I think this is a team where you beat Morocco. You could potentially tie or beat Croatia. That, then it's basically a coin flip at that point to make it into the past the group stages. I think, Alino, it honestly comes down to two guys, and we both know who those guys are. I think Jonathan David has to have a big tournament here. I think the expectations are pretty high for him. He has 35 caps with Canada, so he does have that experience. Obviously not at this level, but I like Jonathan David. I think he's going to have a big tournament. And of course, we got to go with Alphonso Davies, man. He's been considered a top five left back in the world, playing for an elite club like Bayern Munich. All eyes are going to be on Alphonso Davies, and I think this is where he understands that the bright lights are the brightest and he shines bright in these moments. So, you know what, man? I'm going to go with Canada. I think they're going to make it through barely, but I think Croatia here is being a little bit too overvalued here.
I'm with you. I was surprised when just the whole thing was announced and everybody saw Croatia here as just the overwhelming favorite, but I think if there's a team that's going to upset them, I think it is Canada. I see Croatia having a couple draws and Morocco being that one that has it with them. But I think Canada is going to just edge out a second place finish in this group and move on. I think it's going to come down to who gets the draw, how many goals they get. And I think Canada beating a Croatia or a Morocco is going to get them through. And I like what you said there about Davies, because he's coming into this tournament. He's going to be in a forward role. I saw John Herdman put him probably as a forward or a winger. But when he was on Vancouver, I remember when I saw like him come in, play against TFC, was just a teenager. And you can see just how he thinks about the game. Like, he's not a instinct kind of guy. He adapts to his surroundings. And being a world-class defender, I think it's going to help him as a forward, just push guys off the ball. So I'm expecting him and David, who is also a guy being like targeted from all these teams, have a big tournament and got to show some love there for some TFC players on the team. And York U alumni, Mark Anthony Kay, making us York students and alums proud. So I got a lot of fight in this group. I see them going through and surprising Croatia, but I agree there. Is there anyone, like, do you think upsets Belgium, or is Belgium just going to cruise through?
I think Belgium, I don't think they're going to cruise through Canada or Croatia. Maybe like they'll win by two goals at the most, but it's all about with them. I think it's all about possession. They get the ball, they pass it just as well as any team in the world. You have De Bruyne, you have so many guys that have been together for a while. We're talking about Joku and De Catalare are two guys that are not even 22 years old, and they're already arguably scratching to be in the starting lineup. So these are two mainstay guys for the future. De Bruyne is going to be motivated. How many more tournaments does he have? Maybe two at the most. This is Eden Hazard's last tournament, probably Lukaku's last tournament. I'm not going to say they're going to cruise, but I do expect them to win this group. If they don't win this group, I think that's going to just be heartbreaking for Belgium as a country.
Can you imagine, like, the value here? Canada going through, like, plus 1,000. Like, do you feel confident with that kind of odd? Or, like, is Belgium still the safe bet right now?
To win the group, Belgium is a safe bet, but Canada to make it past the group stages is definitely worth your risk. I think this is a team, again, like I said, undervalued. You go based on narrative. Narrative usually trumps a couple high favorites. We saw, dude, I'm an England fan. You remember what happened with Iceland those years ago. Oh. So there's just, it. You build on a narrative. And there are always upsets based on narratives. Canada is a team, man. We haven't been in the World Cup in so many years, before we were even born. So I think this is going to be a tournament where Canada is either going to be looked at as a unbelievable story, or I hate to say it, Alino, we might not get anything. Because, again, we're inexperienced. But at the same time, you have two world-class guys in David and Davies, and I think Osorio is a pretty good player, too. He's been in great form all year. I think at the end of the day, Canada, man, undervalued. You got to take advantage with them.
Speaking of undervalued, we'll go to overvalued, because this group is very disrespectful in Group G. Like, you know, if I'm Cameroon, I'm really upset looking at that. You're looking at Switzerland and Serbia. I like Serbia here just because of, like, the kind of players they have. Like, they have elite players to be kind of undervalued that much, but if I'm Serbian, might as well go for them. That's a good one. But Brazil, are you really confident they're gonna just get everybody in there, get them going early on, score goals, and get 9 points just to leave Group G?
Brazil's a team where they're really aggressive. We've seen in, like, a lot of the Copa Americas, like, they're a team that will definitely, you know, slide tackle, put their arms out, do whatever it takes to win. But they're not going to have to in this group, man, honestly. Serbia is a good shout to maybe finish second. Switzerland, to me, is a big unknown. To me, they're kind of similar, or maybe a tier under Denmark. Like, Denmark has a little more world-class players, but Cameroon at 2,300, I think, is just absolutely disrespectful. Like, they can easily beat Serbia. I think they could easily tie Switzerland. And I will say, though, Alino, Brazil getting 9 points, I don't think that should be too much of a problem. Neymar's looked incredible. They got, you know, Vinny, who just won Champions League with Real Madrid. I think he was the most improved player last year. You have Gabriel Jesus, who went from not playing in Man City to being a top five scorer with Arsenal. I think Brazil is the best offensive team in the tournament. I think they could easily have, 10 goals by the end of the group stages. I think Brazil, man, they are favorited for a reason, but at that value, hell no. Minus 320, not doing that.
And we'll go to one that has a little bit more parity here. Portugal, Uruguay, Ghana, South Korea here, which I think that's another one that's undervalued just a little bit, not as much as Cameroon, but they could maybe, I think a 900 would have been a little bit more respectful. But you think Cristiano Ronaldo can have one more in him here, because he's been in World Cups and international tournaments since we were in elementary school. He's now, like, at the late stages of his career, close to 40 almost. He's, like, coming in, all this attention on him like usual, because that's what he loves to do, put more attention on himself just to get himself motivated. Like, do you think he still has it in him?
Oh, man, I was saying to you before the pod, is he really in elite form? Is this a guy that's going to go out there, not be subbed off? I think he's going to be subbed off, Alino. I think this is a guy now where he's 37 years old. We're talking about a couple names. You know, you got Bruno Fernandes, who's incredible. You got Felix from Atletico Madrid is a guy that can score. Leao's incredible. They have guys up front that could easily, in my opinion, right now, might be better than Ronaldo right now. So Ronaldo, again, I'm a Man U fan, so take what you want with these takes, because I'm a little upset with this guy. But I just think, you know, Ronaldo's a guy in this tournament where he's not in as good form as Messi. I think the lights are going to be more on Messi in this tournament. I do think Portugal wins this group, but I wouldn't be surprised if they finish second, just based off of what we're seeing with the morale with the team right now. I feel like Portugal, the way Ronaldo's been acting, I don't know if this is going to translate on the field. Obviously, they're all world-class players, but you do know, man, one sour apple can really turn a tournament around. So I think Portugal's still going to make it through, but I think, like, Elino, call me crazy. Haven't they always had problems in the group stages? I don't really remember Portugal ever cruising in any tournament that I've watched. Like, when they won the Euro Cup, didn't they not win a game and they advanced? Yeah, they had three ties.
Like, yeah, when they changed the rule.
Like, I don't know. Like, I think Uruguay would be a good one to win the group, just based off of Cavani and Suarez, their last go around. But Portugal should win, but I'm not banking on Portugal.
You mentioned there the lights are going to be on Messi, and there's something about Ronaldo. The ego, I think, is just going to drive him. I think they're all motivated by that. He gets like a high off that shit. So I think he's just going to feed off that. I think we got one performance out of him in the group stage where it's just going to get some people talking. And then I think Portugal, like, they could obviously crash and burn and it will turn into this a whole media mess. But I think he's going to have one performance in this tournament, and it's just going to get people as attention on him when he's out of the tournament again, like usual. But going on to a group here that's, I think, a nice one. Could never know who can finish at the top. Spain and Germany, two like rebuilding teams, I would say. And then you got Japan and Costa Rica, veteran clubs. But I think, is Costa Rica going to be the one that crashes and burns early that everyone's feeding points off of? Or do you think they're going to upset either Germany or Spain?
No, I don't see it. I think this is basically the typical 7-7-3-0, maybe. I think Spain and Germany will probably tie. I don't see any of them really getting the better of each other. I think Costa Rica is going to get killed by Germany and Spain. I don't see it being close. Germany is they're rejuvenated. You know, they haven't been elite for the last, I want to say, tournament. Like, last tournament they were good, but they weren't elite. This is now where you have Havertz is incredible. I think he's one of the best guys on the pitch. Toni Kroos is another guy where, man, like, he's old now, but he can go. I think they have a couple guys like Mario Götze is going to be at the tournament. The guy that got the game winner 2014. Like, that's going to be a nightmarish scenario for Argentina if they face him. But Spain, dude, they got Pedri. The guy is absolutely masterclass. I love Spain. I love what they've done. I think their goaltending is a little bit weird because, like, they're not starting De Gea. I think they should at this point. But, again, I think Germany is the team to beat in that group, man. I mean, Spain, their midfield's better. But I think all in all, you look – for me, honestly, Alino, when you look at goaltending – in any sport, that to me is a make or break. And, you know, when you have Neuer, when you have Klopp, when you have Trapp, you have a lot of good goalies on Germany. If Neuer gets hurt, they have another one to go in. If Spain's goalie gets hurt, I don't even think they put De Gea on the team. I don't even know who the backup is. I think Germany is the team to beat here. I think Germany's going to win the group. It may be tie with Spain. But regardless, Alino, I think one of these two teams from Group E could go the distance.
Yeah, I see it. Like, especially just the way they've been able to rebuild nicely, just get some of their young guys in there. But one thing I'm so happy about with the German team, we finally don't have to see a camera go to that coach anymore because he's no longer there. The guy that just fucking scratches and sniff. We can just see the team play, can actually eat something when you watch. There should be a disclaimer whenever that guy was on the pitch. Disgusting.
He's to pick his nose. Oh my god, I love but, that.
We'll go to Group D, which I think is probably a foregone conclusion here with France. But like, who do you think's finishing in second? Because there's Denmark, Tunisia, and Australia. Is Denmark gonna have some nice practice sessions here?
Yeah, I think it's France and Denmark, and I think that's the most predictable. I mean, you make the World Cup, obviously it's fantastic for your country, but to be Australia and Tunisia right now, I think, is very unfortunate. France has France doesn't even have Pogba, and they're going to be a top four team. So Pogba at the international level, Alino, is elite. We saw in the 2016, we saw in 2018, we saw in 2020. Like, this was a guy, every time he would play for France, he was a top four player out there. And, you know, even without them, they got such good guys. Like, Duchesne is going to be phenomenal. They got so many guys on France. I can name like the whole lineup. They're all elite. Benzema is just reinvented himself. He just won the Ballon d'Or. Griezmann's incredible. Don't sleep on that guy. He can get a couple goals in this tournament as well. Mbappe, all eyes are on him, obviously. A top five player in the world, arguably top three. This team is terrifying, man. Like, even Hugo Lloris, he's still going. I think this is his last tournament. I think the defenders are going to be motivated for Lloris as well. I think France, this is a runaway for France. But for me, the story of this group, Alino, is Christian Eriksen. He's coming back from that cardiac arrest incident in the other Euro Cup. I think this is going to be where Denmark, they're resilient. I think the biggest narrative in this tournament, Alino, is between Argentina, Denmark, and Canada. I think they all have the biggest narratives in this tournament. I think, you know, with Odegaard playing as great as he is for Arsenal, I think he's going to be a guy that leads Denmark's, I think, to a second place finish. And I think Denmark could upset, man, in the round of 16.
I see that too. And it's going to be nice when Eriksen, probably going to be emotional for him and that team when he just hears the anthem, because I know he's played since then. He's had a couple stints, two different teams. It looks like he's back to form, but on an international stage playing for his country, I think that's going to be a nice moment. But I'm looking at France, like Mbappe, he can do something similar to Brazilian Ronaldo, back-to-back World Cup finals as an active player, like leading your team there, and he can actually win both. So that would be crazy. How young he is too, like he is at a different level there. But this group is going to be interesting. Saudi Arabia, I think we can agree, is a favorite. They're just gonna, poor team. They have Lewandowski they have to worry about. They have Argentina's entire attack in Messi to worry about, and an aging Mexico team that is going to look for at least a point. So how bad is this going to be for them?
Saudi Arabia, I still think they're gonna get a point, but it's going to be an ugly point. It's not going to be like a – they're probably going to get outshot like 10-1, and they're going to tie the game 0-0. It's probably going to be a point – it's probably going to be something like that where the Saudi Arabia goalie stands on his head. But you said it perfectly. You got to worry about Lewandowski, who – God, man. Lewandowski at this point, just call him that. He scores goals at will. Mexico, like you said, perfectly. And CONCACAF, they were exposed pretty badly by Canada and USA. I still think they're trying to be a top two team in CONCACAF. I think they're going to be motivated to, you know, really turn some heads with this team. And I think Argentina, like, they're going to kill Saudi Arabia. I think it's going to be a 5-0 game, potential Messi hat trick. I mean, Saudi Arabia, they got the money, but they're not going to get the results, man.
Maybe the next one. Invest money, kind of like what they do with WWE. Just throw $50 million to your soccer program. I think eventually you'll find some that will work out and become superstars. But, Chris, I'm going to let you talk about this next group. It's going to be a big one. You got England, you got Wales, you got the USA, and you got Iran. Is England a favorite, like, overwhelmingly for you, or do you have your doubts just because of the way they performed at the Euro and letting Italy just come in there and take it from them?
I will say this. I have my doubts for them winning the group. This is a team where every single year you just assume they're a first place finish and they finish second, because they come out, they start flat, they don't get the job done early on. Like, their first game's against Iran. They have the easy game first. So if they don't, like, let's say they go out there and they tie 0-0 to Iran, it's not looking pretty. Like Wales, to me, is a team that could easily tie England, and same with USA. So England could come out of this group with 3 points, honestly, if things don't work out, if they don't have the team chemistry. But make no mistake about it, Alino. You have Saka, who's been incredible. You have Marcus Rashford, who's been incredible. We know Harry Kane just scores goals at will at the international level. Raheem Sterling as well. I think they're really going to rely on Kane and Sterling in this tournament. I think the midfield is young. They got Declan Rice. They got Calvin Phillips. They got Mason Mount. I just don't see England being that overwhelming favorite ever, just based on the results that always come. It pains me to say this, Salino. I'm a Leaf fan. When you look at the international level, England is basically like the Leafs in soccer. Just always break in your heart. Doesn't matter. I don't want to sound negative here. I wouldn't be surprised if they lost to USA. I wouldn't be surprised, but I do expect England to finish at least the top eight, at least.
I'm with you. The USA one is kind of surprising. Like, I know they really invested a lot in this. It's a younger group there from the other one that went with Altidore and Bradley and all those guys. So a lot of these players play in Europe on their team, and it might help them going forward, but I still like England going through. I'll be a little bit more optimistic with them in the group stage than the knockout rounds, but I think with Wales, Bale is 35. He's still producing like he did on LAFC. He scored that late goal in a crazy game, but even though his confidence is an all-time high, I just don't see Wales being too much of a threat in Iran. Maybe a draw if they're lucky, but I like England's chances here. Final group, though, got the host Qatar opening up against Ecuador tomorrow. Should be banger. Tons of goals in that one tomorrow. And then there's Senegal and the Netherlands. I might sound crazy here, but I feel like Senegal's chances of going through, and Netherlands, my one thing about them, critique, they peak in the group stage every single World Cup, every international tournament. So I got them cruising to 9 points and then getting eliminated the next round.
Honestly, man, this is a situation where if Netherlands wins the group and they get 9 points, and let's say England finishes second, you're going to see Netherlands and England in the round of 16 or the round of 32. So do the Netherlands really? I haven't been following them all that much. I know they have Depay, who's incredible, but are they really that good, the Netherlands? I don't know if they're going to be a team that is going to finish past the round of 16. I know they're probably going to win, like you said, get the 9 points. Maybe they tie Senegal, but that's it. I agree with you. I think Senegal is better than Ecuador at this point. I think they're going to be the team that, again, they have a narrative. One of their main players is not playing. I think they're going to be motivated to get it done for him. And they're arguably one of the best, teams that come out of that region. So I think Senegal is going to make it through. I think the Netherlands will too, but you said it perfectly. When they go into the knockout stages, I got no hope for the Netherlands.
Should be a fun World Cup. As it goes on, we'll find out some of the results and some of the stories there. By this time next week, we'll know if Canada pulled off an upset over Belgium. And we'll find out if the Netherlands are on the right track, if Saudi Arabia scored a goal. All that good stuff. But we'll go on to hockey now, where we touched on it last time about Phil the Thrill getting closer to that mark, and he finally did it. 1,000 consecutive games in the NHL for Phil Kessel. Now that he's hit this milestone, it brings up the conversation again. How much is he going to go in terms of all these games played, and will it ever be surpassed once he finishes his career?
Never. This is something that you've never seen in all of hockey. I think Marlowe had it originally, and then Yandel broke it, and now Kessel broke it. I think Phil Kessel, man, you could say whatever you want about his physique, but his whole career, man, the narrative is just absolutely incredible. He had, he fought his battle with cancer coming into the league. There were doubts that he would be elite. Goes to Toronto. Boston basically says, now we don't need you. We have Sagan, whatever the case was at that time. We get Phil Kessel. The guy leads our team 6 straight years in a row in scoring. Nobody still appreciates the guy. He leaves, goes and gets 2 cups in Pittsburgh. And then all of a sudden, like time just keeps on passing and he doesn't miss a single game. He's had 1,000 games in his career. It's just, it's incredible, Alito. Like 1,000, you got to imagine, we all get tired. Like there are games where we don't want to play or, you know, we're not going 100%. Imagine doing that in 1,000 straight games. That is just unbelievable, the consistency that Phil has been able to bring. I don't care what anyone says. He's a Hall of Famer. I don't care what anyone says. You could say what you want about him not being good at interviews and not being a good leader. Doesn't matter. There are not good leaders in the Hall of Fame. Phil will be the next one because what he's done is remarkable, Alino. Remarkable.
I'm with you. And just looking at his career, he was 21 years old, and he's a guy that's not really in the camera type of person. And he's asked to be the guy in Toronto of all places at 21 years old. He took that challenge, ends up being the guy that makes his teammates better and leads the team in scoring, makes them entertaining because they were horrible. They gave false hope that they were going to be a playoff team, even though he was literally the only guy that can produce, and made it fun for a while. Gets like traded probably for the best, because if Mike Babcock was a coach, we wouldn't be talking about this number of 1,000. He would have scratched him in his first couple weeks on the job.
I agree.
I think Kessel, the way he had his career, I think what makes it more impressive is, like, I know Marlo did it, was impressive, Yandel, but if you look at Kessel's career and those guys' career, he was probably, I would say 90% of the time out of those games, he was a guy that opposing coaches were looking at and making a game plan to stop. With Marlo, he was probably at a point where he wouldn't be really a factor. Like Pavelski was a guy you had to watch, and Thornton. I think Phil Kessel, for the most part, like I would say 850 or 900 of those 1,000 games, I think the coach is making a strategy to make sure Phil the Thrill doesn't get going offensively. So I think that's what makes him more impressive to me, and I agree with you. I think he has to go in the Hall of Fame with that.
Yeah, I agree, too, with that statement. Like, you could argue, a lot of people would probably say, well, he had Malkin and Crosby, and he wasn't really – if you look back at the statistics, he led the Penguins in scoring in the playoffs. He was a guy that was just as dominant as Malkin, just as dominant in crunch time as a Gensel. So, I mean, Phil Kessel, you said it perfectly. Guys like Marlowe, late in their career, they had guys like Pavelski, Couture, Thornton. They had a lot of guys where Marlowe was not seeing a lot of time. And yeah, say what you want, he was playing with Marner and Matthews, but wasn't playing power play, wasn't doing a lot. He wasn't, like you mentioned, he wasn't being targeted for matchups. Phil Kessel, even in Arizona, was being targeted for matchups because he was on a line with Clayton Keller, who was one of the best playmakers. So I do agree with you there, man. Like, for his 1,000 games, he was always a threat on the ice, and he was always a matchup nightmare. So we got to just respect Phil. And like you mentioned, man, talking about his tenure in Toronto, there was nobody like Phil. And people, for some whatever reason, still can't believe that statement. They say Bozak was good, JVR was good. If it wasn't for Phil Kessel, let's be honest here, Bozak's not getting 55 points. JVR's not getting 30 goals. Lupo's not getting a point a game, being in the All-Star game.
Playing so, even.
Yeah, like Phil Kessel, just the narrative with him was just so immaculate, so unique on so many different levels. To me, the hatred toward Phil in this city, I'll never understand it. Me and you are just unbelievable Kessel fans. But in terms of everyone else, you guys are missing out on a nice, unbelievable hockey player. Because, dude, his story, When he rides off in the sunset, you look at what he's been able to do in his career and with the teams he was with, very undervalued. Very.
And he gets he's in the 400 goal club, so that's another thing. He's got 2 Stanley Cups, 400 goals, Iron Man streak, arguably the guy that should have won a Conn Smythe, so he led the team in scoring and that playoff run. Like, I don't know what else the guy would have to do to, like, what doesn't make him a Hall of Famer, because he doesn't throw a hit and have like black eyes in the playoffs and block shots with his face. Like, I don't understand what their criteria is, and maybe they just don't like him personally, which I don't understand, but maybe he rubs people the wrong way.
Maybe he does. It's okay though. He has his, you know, he has his, what do you call it? He has his unique ways of going about things, his workouts, you know, his work ethic is maybe not the greatest, but hey, he still gets the job done. Like you mentioned, 400 goals. the Iron Man streak, two-time Stanley Cup winner. He's done it.
Yeah, and I don't want to hear those people say, yeah, you know, like athletics and they got all the tools and recommendations. Yeah, drink water, drink Gatorade. This is a guy who drinks Coca-Cola instead of water. This is a guy that doesn't really take that kind of workout off-season health into account. He goes out there and he still puts on this kind of streak. So he goes against the narrative, and I think that's what rubs people the wrong way. He's like the anti-pro athlete, the relatable one that we all love. Feel a thrill.
I'll say this right now, man. If the Leafs don't, like, let's say they don't go far in the playoffs and Vegas is still there, got to go for Vegas. Got to go with Phil. Try to get his third cup, man. That would be cool.
Would be. And we're going to go on now to something else in the NHL. The Toronto Maple Leafs, so we're touching on there. Matt Murray came back and I don't know, he had his ups and downs there, but I know he had a little bit of a layoff, so we got to consider that. Schalgren had his chance, but now that Murray's back, are you more confident in his ability to stay healthy, or do you think that he's eventually going to get injured again and unfortunately back on the IR?
I don't want to sound negative, but with his injury history, it's not looking likely. I still think even when he's healthy, he's going to miss out on some games, I think. I don't know what it is. They like Schalgren. They like him a lot. I don't know what they see in him. I don't think he's ready to be an NHL goalie yet. He's still only 24, 25. He has a lot of skills he has to work on, you know, like getting the puck behind the net, being confident when the play is behind the net. I feel like he's just not confident. But with Matt Murray in net, I went to the game, Alino, against the Devils. Murray looked pretty good. He was making all the right stops. One of the goals he just got absolutely sniped on. It was a breakaway by Heischer. But other than that, he did his job. Obviously, every time he stretches out with his knee, I get a little bit worried because we saw with Mrazek, we've seen with Freddie Anderson. It's like we're cursed in net. They always get a groin injury somehow. So I hope for the rest of the year, you know, we have when Samsonov comes back. Because again, you got to remember, when you have two really good goalies or goalies that are on par with each other, I think that just elevates their game because they're in competition with one another to get more starts. I still think when it's all said and done, Samsonov is going to start more just because he's younger. I think he's just less injury prone at this point. And I think he's also earned his spot to be starter after the first month he played with us. So to answer your question, I am a little more confident with Murray in that instead of Eric Schalgren. But I need to see a little more from Matt Murray before I say, okay, he's our guy to take us to the playoffs.
It would be nice if he could just stay healthy because, I don't know, I'm not confident in Schalgren either. But one thing the Leafs do have here, they got magically $5 million plus of cap space because Muzzin, LTIR, will say that he's going to be on Robita Island for a little bit. But do you think the Leafs need to be more aggressive here? Like, I know a lot of people before the season were like, Patrick Kane's available, maneuver around, see what you can do. But with the extra $5 million they have, should Dubas actually be like, you know what, screw that. Let's get a three-way trade going. I'll get Taves and Kane, reduce salary, and just go all for it. You know, Nice has to obviously go the other way. A guy like Robertson, like Kerfoot, a bunch of your prospects and picks, like, do you go super aggressive in this and make it or break it here?
I don't know, man. I don't think we need Taves and Kane. I think we need more like a defenseman, like a Chychrun. I wouldn't mind a guy like a Colton Parayko being on like the second unit with a Riley or a Liljegren. I'll say this right now, Alino. Sandin is not looking like the D is advertised right now. He's looking like he's been struggling. Justin Hall, forget about it. That guy should not be on the team. I don't want to sound so negative, but he's just made so many costly mistakes. Is Jordy Benn really going to do this for the whole year? I don't think so. So we look at our bottom 6D, and it's looking rough. Like, is Victor Mete going to get the job done? I don't think so either. We need a guy like – I heard we're linked to guys like Shattenkirk, like Gavrikov, even – Erik Karlsson, we've been linked to, but we're going to have to get
that's a lot.
Yeah, like we're gonna ha they're gonna have to retain at least, I want to say 65, not 65, like 50% salary for that to be at least beneficial for us. But I don't know, man. Like we do have Nice, we do have Rodion Amarov, we have prospects that we could deal, but I don't know, man. Like this team offensively, it's not the issue. For me, it's just straight up defensively because Giordano's 39 too, man. He's old. He's on his final legs. TJ Brody, I don't know what happened. All of a sudden, he's injured. So I don't know. We need D though badly.
I agree. The thing with the Leafs is that, like, all the prospects you have, you got to find out if it would be worth it. Because you mentioned, like, Hall, obviously, we don't see him as that guy. They do have Sandin, who's not advertised, just the way we thought he played. Liljegren hasn't really hit his stride. And they haven't really even had Giordano and Brody back together. Like, they had this great partnership in Calgary, and then they're back on the Leafs and they're on different pairs, which I think is a little odd. But with Klingberg kind of available in Anaheim, he's got the 1 year deal. Everyone thinks that it's going to go to the trade deadline. Is that a guy that they should be targeting now and just get it over with instead of going into a bidding war in February and March?
Absolutely, because he's on a 1 year deal. And when there's a defenseman like him on a 1 year deal, where when he made that signing, I was like, is he okay? Like he probably could have got $25 million. He probably could have got a 5 year, 5 million, or a 4 year, 6 million. But he went out and he got 1 year. So if I'm the Leafs, I'm circling Klingberg because he could be a guy where Liljegren, Sandin, they've been on our second power play unit. They're not getting the job done. You have Klingberg who could even maybe push Riley to the second power play unit. That would motivate Riley to play even better too. So yeah, Klingberg, a very underrated defensive D because we've seen what he's done in Dallas where he had numerous 45, 50 point seasons in very limited games. But Alino, make no mistake about it, John Klingberg, very underrated defender, and I think he could be a big addition for the Leafs. And yeah, you could say he's Swedish. It's a little underwhelming because, we've been linked to Chychrun all year. I think Klingberg for a rental could be very, very monumental for this Leaf team, and especially for a young Swedish guy like Sandin.
And then you look at the salary, like it probably wouldn't even be a rental after this year because then Hall would be off the books. He would probably find someone for him. That's 2 million. Liljegren or Sandin, you make a decision on one of those guys. You can have another $3 to $4 million available to give to Klingberg if it works out. So I think if they were to get him, that would be probably the best target. Like Chychrun, Carlson, I think is crazy just because he's on an $11 million deal. And even if they retain salary, you're looking at like 8 million, 7 million. So it's probably too much for a guy who's having a little resurgence now, but can also screw you in the end because age can catch up to him, unfortunately. But I like what you said there. It would be nice to get a guy like that on the team. Chychrun would be also a nice one, but looks like he's having fun there in Mullet Arena. Do you think he's going to want to leave?
Yeah, he doesn't want to be in Arizona, man. He's openly said, "Get me out of here. I don't want to play here." I don't know if you remember, it was the first game at Mullet Arena when they introduced everyone and they said Chychrun's name and they all booed him. So
Oh.
he's not welcome in Arizona. I think his IR stint is a little bit more prolonged because they haven't made a trade yet. I think Chychrun is sucking out, to be honest, man. I don't think he wants to be in Arizona anymore. I've heard Edmonton are kicking tires with him, and I've also heard the Leafs. So regardless, Chychrun, come to Canada. We will treat you nice. And he'd be a great tandem with Morgan Riley. I think that would be one of the better duos in the league.
I'd love that. And speaking of some other guys there that desperately need, I think, a change of scenery, like John Gibson. God
Oh.
love the guy,
Oh
but
man.
he's not doing his career and stat line any favors by being on a team like Anaheim that's rebuilding right now. I think he's still a capable top goalie in the league. It's just, where do you find the fit? Like Edmonton just committed so much money to Campbell, but I'm looking at elsewhere here, like Minnesota, like Fleury, and like, where do you think is a best fit for a guy like Gibson just to get the most out of
You're gonna laugh. Buffalo.
him?
I think, I mean, Gibson didn't want to go to Toronto. I don't know why, but I think Buffalo is in a good spot, Alino. They have Darlene, who's playing phenomenal. Owen Power could be a generational D if you give him time. Tage Thompson, oh my God, the guy is looking like Jamie Benn in 2014. He's just scoring at will. They got Victor Olofsson, Jeff Skinner, all of a sudden. We all know how he works. He either gets 10 goals or 40, looking like he's having another bounce back year. I think they're in a good spot, man, to really drag a couple big-time free agents or trade candidates to Buffalo because, yeah, they're in a little bit of a rough patch right now. I think they've lost six in a row. But you're looking at the direction they're going. I think even the management, they're making more of an effort than I can ever remember because we all know the whole Jack Eichel era there. They were just never contending at all, whereas now they're right there with Detroit. They're right there with Ottawa. I think they're a smidge maybe better than Montreal. You could even argue that. Montreal's starting to become a pretty good hockey team again. But I think John Gibson, if he's looking at availability, I think Buffalo is one of the main targets because they have Craig Anderson, who's 41, and they have a rookie goalie in Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen, who I don't know if he's going to be very good. He has a pretty cool name, but I don't know if he's going to be really good. So I think if I'm John Gibson, I'm looking around the league. Arizona's an intriguing. I mean, if he wants to play in a $15,000 arena, you can go there. But I think Buffalo would be an ideal spot for Gibson.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Like, I was looking at just some of the depth charts around the league. Like, Vegas, obviously, with Leonard out. But I don't know how they would have to do a lot of salary maneuvering in the offseason if they were to do something like that. Vancouver, like, Demko's not playing that well, but he's going to be a future elite top-level goalie in the league. So
I'm not worried with Demko. No.
Like, I don't know if you risk it, like, if you're Vancouver. Like, I know it would be a nice option to turn things around, but if you're John Gibson, do you maybe look at a team that people aren't talking about in the Eastern Conference, like maybe Pittsburgh, or if they can even make the salary work, I don't know, but like Colorado, if Gorgiev isn't doing well, like, do you think those kind of teams that would be options, or would it be a Bobrovsky for Gibson type thing to say, hey, they're both struggling, let's trade them for one another?
I think if he were to go to Colorado, that'd be pretty smart because we've seen Gorgiev and Frank Kuz are really not getting the job done. Their goals against is up this year quite a bit. Cale Makar could only do so much. I mean, they do have Devon Taves and a couple other names like Samuel Girard. But yeah, I agree with you. I think Colorado would be a good fit too, just based off of they struck out by not re-signing Kemper. I think Kemper was the best option for them. He won them the cup. And they just couldn't get the job done. They literally let him and Kadri go, which I think that's a big mistake. But hey, Nichushkin's playing unbelievable. Unfortunately, he's hurt now, but he was playing phenomenal hockey. But Gibson going to Colorado would be good. And I also think Gibson going to Vancouver or even Pittsburgh would be good because you'd have Casey DeSmith as probably the best third-string goalie in the league. And you'd have Tristan Jarry and John Gibson basically splitting time. It'd kind of be like what we saw from Freddie Anderson and Jack Campbell 2 years ago. So if Gibson really wants to maybe reinvigorate his career, you go to Pittsburgh with Sid and Letang and Malkin and you play about a solid good 40 games down the stretch and just play to the best of your abilities. Because, man, you're playing with Crosby. At the end of his career, you're going to be motivated.
I agree there. And as we go on here, it's going to be an interesting night because AEW is having their pay-per-view full gear. And they got a big card coming up here. I'm actually more excited than this pay-per-view than All Out, and All Out's like the biggest event. So I think they did a better job with this one. But there's a lot of talk about MJF. We'll start off with him going for the world title against Moxley. Do you think he finally gets the job done, or do you think they got something planned here where maybe it's a swerve of a double turn, maybe Moxley drops a title and MJF turns heel from this little tweener run that he's on, or do you see something else maybe coming and taking away everything that MJF worked for?
Oh, man, I'm telling you, it's either going to be a coronation of MJF getting his first title, or Ethan Page is going to come out and cost MJF and make MJF confirm that he's the top babyface in the company. So regardless, it's a win-win scenario, man. You have MJF, who can become finally at the top of the mountain. That's a great narrative. You have John Moxley, who just continues to be, looks like the guy that's running with it in AEW. Or you have Ethan Page, who's going to be the guy where turns heel and has the biggest program of his career. And he's Canadian. So regardless, it's a win-win, Alino. And I think when you look at the last couple pay-per-views with John Moxley and CM Punk, there was really not a win-win scenario there. So I think this is going to rejuvenate AEW's main event scene with MJF being that guy. John Moxley saying he needs a vacation. I think this all points to MJF getting this coronation, and it's going to be a big moment in wrestling history. I think this is going to mark a really, really big turn for AEW tonight.
And speaking of a big turn in AEW, we got something here where at All Out, it was a big turn of events when MJF came out. It was like a big dispute there. Like, he hasn't been on TV in a while, comes out as a mystery guy, and has this whole buzz taken away from a press conference. So do you think in a crazy, if anything, everything boils over, could CM Punk come out as a swerve there and ruin his moment again?
I hope not. I honestly, at this point in time, I think it's been too long. And if they really, I mean, would Punk be a heel if he came out and costed MJF? I assume. Because MJF, I feel like a lot of the fan base wants him to win. Whereas CM Punk, with the incident, I don't think a lot of people, yeah, he's one of the greats. He's one of the most respected. But there's just instances in his career, Alino, where a lot of people kind of take back their respect for him because of how reckless he is as an individual. So I don't want to see Punk, honestly. And you know I'm a big Punk guy. I just think it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I think it would actually push back AEW as a company if Punk comes out tonight.
So you're not on that. You don't subscribe to some of the other people that think it's all a work and CM Punk's just going to come out and be a heel?
I don't see it. I don't. I really think they put so much effort into MJF. I don't think all this exposure, him winning the casino ladder match just to have Punk come out and cost them. I just don't see it happening. And if it does, just scrap all the WWE rumors, because that shit's not happening.
We got another one here that a lot of people are going to be talking about. It's a big return. We got Britt Baker taking on Saraya. So God. I don't know. A lot of people are worried about this one. It's a little too soon. You're getting back in the ring. She's supposedly clear to return. But do you think this is going to be a good match or even a long one?
No. I don't think it's going to be a good match, man. It's either going to be really surprising and maybe be 8 minutes, or it's going to be 2 minutes. I think Britt Baker at this point in time, she's one of the top heels in the company. I think this is where we saw back beforehand in that Fatal 4-Way. I think she probably should have won that match, but they gave it to Toni Storm. I think Jamie Hayter is another one where eventually I think Britt Baker and Jamie Hayter are going to collide for that belt. I don't know when, but I think this is a nice little spot here. I really hope Britt Baker doesn't lose this, but what do you think, Alino? I think Saraya, she might get the win here, but I don't think she should, honestly.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think they really want to make a statement that they're different than WWE and all that. Like, I would have the AEW veteran get the win, and you say this whole story of like Saraya building herself back up and have to chase her if she eventually becomes champion and they have a rematch maybe a year from now and that's where she gets a win. So I think if she beats her, it kind of takes away from the division that she just can have this layoff and come in and beat your top stars like that. So I don't know. I'm not too crazy about, I think this is like a lose-lose in a way for the company.
I agree. It's like, also if Saraya wins, that's basically like saying a month ago, Saraya would have walked into that Fatal 4-Way and potentially would have won. And you're looking at that and it's like, that's just absurd. That doesn't happen. So honestly, Alino, I agree with you. I think it's a lose-lose situation. And how long do we have to wait until Saraya turns heel?
Yeah, I think they need to do that. I think pull the trigger on that one eventually. Maybe she goes after some of the other women there that are baby faces, like a Toni Storm turns on her and start that program. But now that I got the card here, what do you think of that women's matchup? Do you think it's lost in the shuffle because the whole TBS title is getting a lot of attention with Jade Cargill and Nyla Rose, this 2-month-long storyline, and obviously Britt Baker Saraya is going to get a lot. So do you think they're going to be unfortunate, like, loss of attention on their match?
Which one? The Britt Baker one?
No, the Tony Storm and Jamie Hayter match.
I think that's going to be the best one of the three, though. I think in terms of just overall quality, I think Tony Storm is the best, I think, out of all of them, either her or Britt Baker. But I think Tony Storm is trying to prove, like, hey, I was in WWE. I wasn't being, you know, utilized well. I'm here now. I have the title. Jamie Hayter's up and coming. I really like what they've done with Jamie Hayter. I think the whole crowd wants Jamie Hayter to win this match. I don't think it's going to happen, but I do agree with you. I think just based off how much they've been really, you know, advertising Jade Cargill in her run, I think this is going to be a little bit of an underwhelming spot on the card. But make no mistake about it, Alino, I think both these women know that when they're out there, they're going to put their all. And I think Toni Storm and Jamie Hayter, of the three women's matches, I think it's going to be the best one.
And moving on to a matchup for a title that I'm even surprised that they're putting so much attention on, Chris Jericho's ROH world title. It seems like it's just a prop at this point, but the guys involved. You got Claudio, you got Bryan Danielson, you got Jericho, and Sammy Guevara is also there too. So what do you think about this match? Like, do you think it could surprise some people and maybe Jericho drops a title?
It's going to be match of the night, Alino. I think it's going to be phenomenal. I think what we saw at All Out with Brian and Jericho, I think that's also going to lead into this. I think it's going to be very hard hitting. You have the two really fast in-ring workers with Claudio and Sammy. I think Sammy, actually, a lot of people I saw on Twitter were bashing that he's in this match because, again, has never held an ROH title. So it's kind of just like, what are you doing in there? But he does have history. Obviously, he's been with Jericho for a while. Do you see anybody beating Jericho here? I said to you last time we talked about AEW, I think Brian's the guy to win it. I don't know if he's winning it here, though. I think Jericho might retain this, and I think Garcia is going to be the guy that wins it eventually.
Yeah, I agree. I think the more that they have like Jericho and Brian in this together, I think it would take away from it if Brian just beats him after all these matches. So I'm with you. I think like Garcia would eventually have to be the one. Maybe they're building it for a year and he does it All Out, but I see Jericho's reign continuing here. And speaking of just reigns that are going to continue, I think the tag title one is an interesting one here because I think we're finally going to see Swerve turn on Keith Lee.
Yeah, I agree there too. I think this is where we've been saying it for like a month and a half, where these two guys can be unbelievable single stars. And Keith Lee and Swerve Strickland, they're both two guys that are just, to me, they're literally very similar to, what's that, the tag team in WWE, what are they called? Doesn't matter. At this point, both those guys are going to be phenomenal. They're going to put on a hell of a singles, you know, singles feud. The Acclaimed are over as hell right now. They're not losing this match. Billy Gunn is just, I love what he's been doing. He's so entertaining. But to me, they're like the Street Profits, where both of them, like, they can, one can turn on each other and it'll be an unbelievable singles feud. I think that's going to be the same here. In my opinion, Alino, I think the one that gains the most out of this is Swerve Strickland. I think, I mean, when we saw it at that other tag team match, that match to me was match of the night. They were just, the crowd was eating it up. And then when Swerve and Keith Lee retained, oh boy, that was just, that didn't get the love. And then, of course, they won it on AEW. Well, I think they won, did they win it on Dynamite? Yeah. The Acclaimed? Yeah, they won on Dynamite. So I just think this match is going to be fun. This could be a potential match of the night too, Alino, but I'm going with the Acclaimed retaining.
I'm with you there. And this match I'm actually looking forward to. Steel Cage.
I knew it.
Christian Cage on the outside just being an asshole, and Jungle Boy going against Luchasaurus. I actually think Jungle Boy is going to win this, but I think they're going to protect Luchasaurus and have Jungle Boy maybe go through the door type of thing to keep this going. Do you see that happening? Do you see Christian getting involved in just helping Luchasaurus get the win?
I would love either way. I think Christian is the biggest asshole on the planet right now, and I absolutely love it. Luchasaurus, I could see that happening where he literally throws Jungle Boy like through the steel cage, and that's how Jungle Boy wins. And it's like, oh, wow, okay, that's an underwhelming win, but hey, it protects both guys. Or I could literally see Christian coming in, just beating the hell out of Jungle Boy, and Luchasaurus gets the easy win here just to build more heat. I think this Luchasaurus run, man, could be very, very beneficial for him if they do it right. You can't just have Jungle Boy beat him all the time. I think you got to build Jungle Boy as that sympathetic babyface, and they're doing a tremendous job with it. We saw at the last pay-per-view with his family there, and he loses in 30 seconds. So I do expect a very good match here. I think hard-hitting, but I'll go with Jungle Boy getting the win.
This match is, I'm really looking forward to this. It's not going to be any super kicks and flips and dives. Just three guys fucking going at it. And I think this one is actually going to be, we talked about coronations before, but I see this being a big one for Powerhouse Hobbs. I don't see him winning, but I think he's going to be a big part of the finish here. We got Samoa Joe, Wardlow, and obviously Hobbs. But do you think that Powerhouse Hobbs helps? Like he gets a finishing move there on Samoa Joe. Wardlow sneaks a pin, and they just go one-on-one now for another feud after this match.
I think this is going to be an absolute train wreck of a match. Like, you have three unbelievable human beings just going at it. I think Wardlow is the guy that's going to come out and win. I think Samoa Joe, we say, you know, about veterans, he's coming in here. He's obviously a big-time guy in AEW, but I don't see him getting the win here. I think he's just in this match more to, you know, make the match result a little more unpredictable, a little bit better. But I agree with you. I think Powerhouse Hobbs, this is going to be a breakout performance, I think, for him. And I think if he doesn't win the belt, which Alino, I'm not canceling out, I think he could win this, but I do think Wardlow and Powerhouse Hobbs moving forward as a singles feud would be absolutely amazing. So love Samoa Joe. He's been doing it forever. I think it's a good spot here for him to be in this triple threat, but I got Wardlow retaining here.
I like it. And speaking of tag teams, the last two we'll talk about, we'll first go to this one. Jeff Jarrett's back to his old tricks here with the guitar and calling people slap nuts. And he's with Jay Lethal. They've been targeting Darby Allin and pissed off Sting a little bit. Now Sting's coming back to save the day. And he's going after, they're doing that rivalry again with him and Jarrett. Do you see Sting and Darby Allin winning? Or do you see a surprise here where maybe somebody can turn on each other in this match?
Hey, you know what? I've been saying it for a long time. I think Darby Allin wants a little bit more spotlight. So I could see Darby Allin maybe turning on Sting, but I would love to see Sting turn on Darby Allin. That would be something where it's like, okay, can you imagine having Sting and Jeff Jarrett like kind of be on the same page in 2022? Like they were feuding in the 90s, man. That's just, it's, wrestling is so awesome. Just how they're still doing it 25, 30 years later. I love this for both Jay Lethal and Darby Allin. I think if you give both of these guys the time, which I think they will, I don't think Jeff Jarrett and Sting will be in this match too long. I think this could be fireworks, man. This could be a very good match. Very under, again, a lot of matches on this card, Alino, I think are very undervalued. I think this is going to be a very good show. I got Darby Allin getting the win here and maybe building up to potentially breaking up with Sting down the line, because I think Darby Allin, when push comes to shove, Alino, I think he wants a little more success in AEW.
I like it. And that would be cool. Imagine Sting just fucking turning on him. Or Darby. Like, I think it would be... So they've been actually a team for a while. Like, a since Sting time. Debuted. Like, yeah. A couple years. This is pushing 3 years almost. So, they've done a good job with those two. But the big return there in the Trios title. A lot of people think it's just the Elite going to come in and get the win back, but I don't know. I think I wouldn't rule out, I guess, them losing, but Do you see anything happening where we'll see a surprise return at the end of the match there to challenge the cleaner?
We could. That's definitely a possibility. There's obviously, he always has a target on him as he is one of the best to ever do it. I think Pac needs to win this match. If, let's say, someone comes out and costs the Elite, I think Pac has to get the pin. He's looking very strong in the last couple of months. I think it's like, I don't know if they listened to our pod, but I said like 2-3 months ago, like they need to utilize him more. He's way too good. And now they're finally starting. Like, you have him with Penta. That's incredible. Like, that team is unbelievable. I love Rey Fénix. I love Penta. And I love Pac. Love all three of them holding the belts. I really hope the Elite just don't come, you know, waltzing back in here and winning. I just don't think it's good for the, I don't think it's a good look for Tony Khan, obviously. Like, they're coming off a suspension and they just come in here and win. Alino, if there is someone that comes out here, though, and costs Kenny Omega, who do you want it to be?
If he's healthy, I would say Adam Cole. But yeah, if it's not him, because obviously they got rid of Bobby Fish there, and I think O'Reilly's injured, so they can't do that whole feud they wanted to do. But I think Will Ospreay would be the perfect guy, because in New Japan, they have that pay-per-view coming up every year, January 4th, and Kenny being with AEW, and they have ties there. I think it would be perfect. Yeah, Will Ospreay costs him the match and then challenge Kenny one-on-one. They do it in Japan, and Kenny can get some of that money that he lost from being suspended for getting bit backstage like a fucking dog. But I think this would be a good way to smooth things over with everybody. Like, they can move forward. Talk about future pay-per-views. So I would go Kenny Omega, Will Ospreay as ideal situation, or if Adam Cole's healthy, have him come back into it.
I'm all in for Adam Cole, man. That'd be incredible. I miss that guy. But how many super kicks are there going to be in this match?
I think I might lose count after 500. I think every second move, every transition, we'll see a kick, another super kick, but they got like 3 months of super kicks they got to get out of their system, so that's going to be a super kick heavy matchup.
Mark and Nick Jackson every chance they get. You're just going to hear the slap. It's like, oh my God, how many?
Do you think there's going to be any, I know they can't talk about it, but that doesn't mean they can't add it into their match. Any like callbacks to whatever supposedly happened backstage? Like, do you see Kenny Omega probably getting bit by Penta, or a chair being thrown at Nick Jackson? Just show people, yeah, you know what, that probably happened, and they're not going to say it in public, but they'll put it into a matchup.
Again, like, it's petty, but I mean, I could see it happening just based off, everybody knows what happened backstage. Why not turn it into, you know, a theme in their matches? They get bit, they get a chair thrown at them. Okay, these guys are dicks. They deserve this. They deserve to get bitten. They deserve to get a chair thrown at them. I mean, I think Pac in this point, Alino, to me, call me crazy, those three guys are coming off a suspension. I'm most invested in Punk. I mean, in Pac, out of all six of these guys in this match. I think he's going to be the guy that, when push comes to shove, he's going to get the pinfall here, man. I think Pac, after what we saw with this promo, really showing that he's the leader of Death Triangle, I think Pac is going to have a phenomenal 2023, man, in AEW.
And is there any guys on this pay-per-view that you're surprised aren't on it? Like Orange Cassidy, they built up a lot, and he's a champion, and he's not even on it. Do you think we'll see him eventually throughout the show, or do you think this is just a mistake not putting him on here?
I think Orange Cassidy is a guy that should be on the card. I think Ethan Page, we're going to obviously probably see him, but I think he should have something going on. Another guy, too, we've been saying, I think Garcia and Starks, they also, I think, are deserving of at least something in this spotlight. I think Garcia, it's only a matter of time before he breaks the ceiling. Same with Ricky Starks. But other than that, I think, like, Miro's been a little quiet, hasn't really done too much of to be deserving, which is unfortunate. Same with, you know, Aleister Black and all those other guys. But I do think Ricky Starks and Orange Cassidy specifically should be on this card, I think.
With you. Should be a fun one tonight. And we'll get on as the weeks go on here with the World Cup and NHL. Maybe there'll be something else happening in the NBA that we can talk about. But it's been a fun one. Episode 199. We'll be back next week with more and a recap of what happened. So, Chris, this was fun. And see you guys next week.
Boom.